All right. As I said, we left off with point 10. If you're just joining us, we do have some copies of the material in the back. Last time, as far as that last point, we said might discipline sometimes best be delayed. And we discussed that there may be times, there may be cases where it does need to be delayed, and there are some times where it may need to be absolutely immediate. We also want to make sure when we think about discipline, especially from the standpoint of elders, that we understand why. What's the purpose of it? Is it punitive? Is there some other means that we're trying to accomplish? We have here three or four passages. Let's get our helpers lined up. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 6. And then when we have Hebrews 12 read, we'd like you to read that from the King James or New King James, 1 Corinthians 5 and Galatians 6, 1. Who wants to, in a minute, take care of 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 6? All right, Lois. Then we'll turn over. You need the King James, the New King James. If you didn't bring those translations with you, they should be handy in a pew Bible. Who wants to take care of Hebrews 12, verse 14? Jeff. Then we'll look at 1 Corinthians 5, 12 and 13. Our helper there will be 1 Corinthians 5, 12 and 13. Bonnie. And after that, we'll look at Galatians chapter 6, verse 1. Who wants to take responsibility for that one? Glenda. Okay, thank you. Let's start thinking about the reasons, the purposes behind church discipline with 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 6.
Your boasting is not good. Do not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump of dough.
Okay, if you were looking at this verse on your own, thinking of it in terms of church discipline, what would you extract as far as the purpose for discipline, 1 Corinthians 5, 6? Why discipline? Why disconnect someone from the flock? Paul said a little leaven does what? Leaven's a whole lump. Well, what does that mean? Somebody surely spent a little time in the kitchen.
Well, yeast makes the whole lump rise.
Okay. So the principle is that a small amount of something can have a major impact. We recognize it with rat poison, don't we? Anybody know about how much poison is in rat poison? It's 1 or 2 or maybe 3%. It's very little. So it's not that they're getting a ton of poison. It's a small amount, but that's sufficient. And that's your principle in 1 Corinthians 5, 6. All right, taking that information, applying it to church discipline, why discipline? Because if... Okay, it might be division, or we might say two sin effects. So you have something small, it begins to taint, it begins to affect. What about mold? You see mold on something outside, see moldy food, you know, well, that's no problem.
It spreads.
It spreads, and that's the same thing. So when we think about discipline, one of the reasons that it's to be practiced is it prevents other people from being infected in the congregation. So that's kind of the negative side of it. Let's look at the positive side of it. Hebrews 12, 14, Jeff.
Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord.
Okay. When you didn't read that from King James, New King James, did you?
It's King James.
Is it? Okay. I thought they used a different word there. Some translations we use the word sanctification, without sanctification, or that holiness no one is going to see. So negatively, 1 Corinthians 5, 6, discipline keeps the bad stuff out. Positively, what's discipline do? You stay away from the bad stuff and you... All right, you've got discipline presented in both positive and negative terms. It's going to continue the healthy stuff, but at the same time, it's going to keep out what would cause things to spiritually rot. And then look at that third point as well. Holiness or sanctification is one purpose for discipline. That's true. But do you think sometimes there may be a case where a congregation is engaging in discipline and they understand these two things as far as the positive and the negative consequences of it, but they don't engage in it in a holy way? Here is a holy act designed to keep the congregation holy, but it's done in an unholy way. Is that possible? Yes. What would some examples of that be? How would you do that in a local congregation? Not that you would want to, but... All right. We gave the illustration about 3 weeks ago of the congregation that's had a policy, if you're not here for 2 or 3 weeks, we just disfellowship you. Now, can you imagine if somebody died? Now, I don't know. I've known of cases where that has happened as far as not the death, but they were in the hospital and they had fellowship withdrawn. But can you imagine how you would look as an eldership or how you'd feel as a person if somebody died and You know, they've just not shown up in a couple weeks and they're out there buried in the cemetery. Well, we withdrew from so-and-so. And somebody comes along and says, well, here's the obituary. You know, they died 3 weeks ago. Well, you know, that's kind of an extreme example, but you see the problems with that. So investigate the facts. You think there might be a case where congregation just doesn't like somebody and they use discipline? We're going to go out and we're going to get him. We're going to bury him. We're going to take care of him. We know how to fix him. Well, you would hope that that would never occur, but that kind of thing has occurred, and that's not the purpose for discipline. It's not to go out and let's see who we can bury or let's see who we can destroy. We want to keep sin out. We want to uphold righteousness, 1 Corinthians 5:6, Hebrews 12:14, and then let's go back to 1 Corinthians 5 and look at verses 12 and 13. This is similar, but there's also a distinction that we can make with this passage too.
For what have I to do to judge them also that are without? Do not ye judge them that are within, but them that are without God judgeth. Therefore put away from among yourselves that wicked person.
Okay. Have we ever had, maybe with the summer, we've got a good example of this, where we tried to keep something separate? We had two things. And for whatever reason, we didn't want to have them mixed up. Maybe we were planting seeds. You're out there in your cucumber patch, and you've got some pumpkin seeds. You don't want to mix the seeds, so you make sure that you deal with the pumpkin seeds over here, the cucumber seeds over here, maybe it's flower seeds or something else. Paul says there's a clear distinction when it comes to the saved and the lost. And we want to make sure that we keep that distinction. Now, again, that's related to 1 Corinthians 5:6, Hebrews chapter 12, but that's one of the purposes for discipline, to make sure that we have an understanding that there are sheep and goats, they're saved and unsaved, they're the righteous and the unrighteous, and discipline, that's what he's talking about in 1 Corinthians 5, helps accomplish that. Then in Galatians chapter 6, verse 1, another purpose for discipline. This would be one of the major reasons for discipline. Why do we try to correct people? Paul says, if anybody's overtaken in any trespass, ye who are spiritual do what? Restore him. What's that word mean?
Bring him back.
Get him back into the flock. Well, we've got all the other reasons, but this is another reason for discipline. We're trying to win him back. We're not trying to destroy him. We're not trying to give him or her a bad reputation, but we are trying to help an individual go to heaven. So you might be able to come up with some more reasons, other purposes for church discipline, but these are certainly some that you will find in the scriptures. You also, I think, would want to pause and make a couple of points, such as we have with item 6, subpoint 6. Discipline is not a show of force. Do you think, though, there are some people who may do that, especially new eldership? We discussed this, I think, briefly last week. We're going to show the congregation that we want to do right, and we're going to be a strong eldership. So we're going to start out and go back and get a list of people who haven't been here in 25 years, and we're going to show them. We're going to withdraw from them if they don't decide to start showing up soon. Well, you can do that. But is that the wisest course of action? And we talked about that, and that's probably not the best way to go. But there are some people who do that. And in one form or another, it comes out to be a show of force.
Well, it says do it in gentleness.
Yeah. And they may, well, we were gentle. You know, we sent out letters and we went out to see him. But people can excuse bad or sinful behavior in a lot of different ways. And that's what you have there. But that is what the text says, and that's what people do need to do. What about the other point that we have here? This, again, it would be very selfish, narcissistic. But do you think it's possible for an eldership to engage in discipline so they feel better about themselves? Or maybe a congregation without elders? Yes, and it can be. Yeah. Before an eldership embarks on church discipline, do you think they should know the purposes, at least the key purposes behind it? Yeah. You know, it's to restore, it's designed to help sin from infecting the group, designed to keep a clear distinction between the saved and the lost. So there is a lot of stuff here. And in previous classes, we've said we need to pray for the elders. And for all the reasons that we've looked at plus today, because they can fall into that same temptation. You know, pride, or, you know, Peter talked about lording it over the flock, so he certainly was aware of that in his day and time. So it is something that needs to be dealt with great, great care. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move on to our next section? Quiet class today. Okay. A scriptural method of engaging in church discipline. When you deal with the Bible, just like with life, you have, and as I said, we'll talk about this more next week, but you have some things which are laid out in a very specific way. For example, when Jesus said, go teach people, go preach, you know, would it be okay as far as the Great Commission to go out and teach cooking classes, fulfill the Great Commission that way?
Teach what?
Cooking classes. Teach people how to be electricians and plumbers. Well, that's not the Great Commission. He said, go out and teach what? The gospel. All right? So we've been given that specific information, so we don't have the right to substitute that. But how are we going to execute that command? Well, there's openness there. There's leeway there. He's not specified. It's generic as far as the authority to go. We might use a train, bus, plane, or, you know, subway, whatever is available to us. We might go in person. We might send a letter. We might use the internet, a lot of different ways. When it comes to elders, we know that discipline is part of the package, right? But how exactly are you going to execute that? You don't have a lot of specific passages which say you must follow step 1, 2, 3, 4 before you withdraw from somebody. So here, God has been elastic enough with this topic that you, in a local congregation, you might do several of the things that we've talked about. Might you go personally in dealing with someone? Sure. Might you send a letter? Might you use a phone call? Might you engage other members of the congregation? There are all kinds of things that you might do, and all those things are found within that general authority for discipline. So we would not point to any specific passage and say this is the way that discipline must be done. You might have six congregations. All six have to discipline someone this year, 2015, and they all six follow different methods. There's no sin in the six methods that are pursued as long as people follow the principles. For example, what Betty talked about and, you know, 1 Peter 5, those kinds of things. But one of the passages that we might use as a guide is what we find in Matthew chapter 18. Somebody have the New American Standard? Okay. Saw Lois first. Do you want to read that? And then we'll ask you to read from another translation. Maybe King James or ASV, Jeff, if you've got that with you. But let's start with the NSAB.
And if your brother sins and reprove him in private, if he listens to you, you have won your brother.
Okay, that's enough. I'm just going to stop you right there. Read the first few words again and listen as a class very carefully.
And if your brother sins, go and...
Okay, that's enough. All right, let's have another translation. Read.
Moreover, if my brother shall trespass against thee...
Okay, is there a difference between those two? Read it again, Jeff.
Moreover, if my brother shall trespass against thee...
Stop. Lois?
And if your brother sins, go...
Stop. There's no difference between the two?
It doesn't say against you.
Yeah. So you have to use multiple translations to see that, but some versions will say, if he sins against you. And that's probably typically how we've heard that over the years. But you'll find that other versions say, if your brother sins. There's nothing as far as against you. And the reason for that is there's a difference in the Greek text.
What version was that? American Standard?
New American Standard.
Okay, American.
Yes, the American Standard has against thee. So if you've never looked at that passage in any other version, or you've never picked it up from a class or sermon... you might be really surprised because, well, some words just disappear if you're using New American Standard. So I point that out because there is a difference in the Greek text. And depending on which way you look at that, if it's against thee, okay, that's one thing. But if your brother sins, that would sound a lot more like the church discipline category, doesn't it? So whichever, today isn't the time to discuss which option is probably the better one there, but at least in principle. And when you look at that passage, what comes to mind as far as principles, things that we can apply to church discipline? What are some things that stand out?
Sin and go.
All right. Sin would obviously be the first thing. I didn't have that in the sheet, but there's a problem that needs to be addressed. And once that is understood, then there needs to be some activity. You need to start going. So those would be the first 2 points. Do you just run right out to the whole congregation and say, well, we've got a problem here, and as elders, we're going to discipline this family or this guy? No. What do you find in Matthew 18? You start out with... All right, we've got the facts, and it's true that this fellow sinned. And now we're going to go, but we're going to keep this at the lowest possible level. Isn't that how it works in a secular world? You have a problem on the factory line, or you have a problem somewhere else. Do you just call up the CEO and say, well, the machine's not working? It doesn't work like that. Who do you take that up to?
The individual.
Oh, you might start with the individual operator, maybe the guy that used the machine before you. You may take that up with the foreman, or maybe if you've got a group leader out there on the line. You just don't run right up the chain. You just don't. It's the same principle if you're dealing with tools. You just don't start out with a sledgehammer. Now, you may need to apply more pressure as things don't work, and that's what you find in Matthew chapter 18. So this would be one model as far as something to use for church discipline. Thus, Doug?
And we're looking at that verse where you talk about some don't show that sin against thee, but it's like so many other verses, we stop and only read one verse. Mm-hmm. And if you read something before and after it, it explains. The very next verse tells you to go again, between him and yourself. It's understood that sin was against one person, not the congregation. So there's so many times when you deal with a lot of people in other churches that they'll hold on to this one verse, and you have to say, okay, let's read the verse before it, and let's read it, what's after it, let's see what it's talking about. So a lot of the scriptures will explain itself just by reading the verse before, the verse after.
Yeah.
And it's pretty consistent.
Yeah. And I do think you're probably dealing here with an individual situation rather than, so I would be supportive of the words probably think against thee. But still, the principles that you can extract here as far as there's a problem, trying to work through it at the lowest possible level, those things are useful. So you're right, always keep the context in mind. Two, this consideration as well. Do you think there are some people who they look at that idea, taking two or three with you, not so much as maybe the Lord intended it or as we should use it, but this guy or this family, they've not been willing to repent, so we're going to get some witnesses. We're going to get some people to prosecute our case. And if anything comes up, we're going to have some people that can, back us and say, okay, here are two, three witnesses, and, we all heard the same thing. Well, do you think that's ever happened? It has. And would you think that when people do that, they're headed in the wrong direction? Flip it around. Suppose that you're involved with sin and you've got two or three people coming and you perceive either by how they're acting or you perceive by the words that they use that they are there in an adversarial role. How would you react? How would you feel?
Most often you react with anger.
All right. I think most people would probably not receive that real well. It's, you're not coming to restore my soul. What are you doing? You're here really for your own interest, right? You're here maybe to make yourself look good. You're not after the, biblical model of trying to make sure that I'm coming back and being part of the flock of God. So you're back there to motivations and intentions. So be very, very careful. If you're ever involved in this kind of thing, Paul, I think, 2 Corinthians 13, 1 and 2, as far as a cross-reference, would be helpful there as well. Then we have from Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15, Paul says, speak the truth, but tell it in... You remember? Speak the truth in love. If you're dealing with discipline, whether or not you have elders or maybe as an individual in the congregation, do you think it's possible to engage in that practice without love?
Yes.
Yes. How could you do that as far as maybe making that known to the congregation and not using love? Put yourself in the person's position that's being withdrawn from or the person who might be withdrawn from because the process is ongoing. How would you feel, Brad?
Take out a newspaper article.
All right. Publish it. Sure. So-and-so is a sinner. We're really going to shame them. We're going to humiliate them. So we'll just broadcast it and put it on Facebook or somewhere else in the web. You could do that. And we're just trying to communicate this to people. What else might you do that would not be speaking the truth in love? Do you think when you're dealing with someone in sin, you need to fill in every detail? Probably not. Because if you do that, long term, likely what will you have done back here? All right. The person is looking at how that was dealt with, and if you lay out every detail, they're thinking, well, hey, those people know all those lurid or lewd details about me, and how can I ever go back and face them again? You think that's ever happened? Yeah. Now, if you are the eldership, what happens if you're so vague? People, I've seen that too in a congregation. What were the elders saying this morning? Sounds like somebody's in sin, but we just have no clue. People being people, no matter how well they've been taught, chances are when they head out that door, they go to lunch. What's going to be on the conversation at the lunch table? Oh, I wonder who it was. Somebody sure sounds like they're in sin. You think, well, no, I think it was her. You know, and you maybe narrow down the person, and then, you know, you've got the same kind of thing going on. So here again, you're back to that idea of balance. The elders are giving out some information, encouraging people not to discuss it. And, you know, sometimes people follow that and sometimes not. But the ultimate goal is to make sure that you maintain that purity in the congregation, and when you have those cases where something needs to be addressed, to try to give enough information that satisfies the need to communicate that, and you don't go so far where a person feels like they can't come back. You've embarrassed them, you've humiliated them.
You think that sometimes the reason they take a second or third, it's not necessarily that a second or third person say anything, they're just witness to what is said by the other person, so that is, that person can't tell the church a lie. And so they're just basically witnesses. Witnesses usually aren't the ones that speak, typically, unless they're called to speak. Somebody usually talks to that individual, as he talks about those that are spiritual. And the other two are just to witness what went on.
That's true. Witnesses can serve in a lot of different ways. Typically, I think that would probably be what we would often find, but they might help a person communicate some information, and you certainly might have that in a spiritual situation. A person maybe is looking for the right words, not able to offer maybe some information, and as in a Bible study, that silent partner steps up and says, well, you know, maybe we could express it this way, or here's another idea, here's an illustration, this is what we're concerned about, those kinds of things. So, yes, but it's not the prosecuting team that is over there.
Yes. And if everybody's almost feels like even if they're right, they're attacking somebody, it's a little,
yeah.
If you've ever been in a situation, jobs, where something comes up and you got two or three people trying to say something about yourself, then you feel like you're being attacked.
Yes.
You don't get any chance to say anything.
I think that's why Paul said in Galatians 6:1, ye who are spiritual, not just send anybody over to Joe's house, but try to have some people go that, you know, have some common sense, they're well grounded in the scriptures, and they can probably deal with that as well as anybody can in that local situation.
Spiritual, it depends on who you're dealing with.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they can be very smart, they can be very easy to persuade other people.
Yeah.
It just depends on who you're dealing with, how well you're going to be able to remain spiritual.
Yeah. There again, you get back to the wisdom of elders and why I think we need to pray for them. Anybody else? Okay, let's switch here and go back to what we did once before with the handout. I'm going to play the person who's bringing a problem to the elders, and you as the class get to be the eldership. One more time. Here are 9 situations. You as an eldership, let me know how you're going to deal with it. There's a Christian family. And I think every congregation has this at one time or another, to one degree or another. And they are just constantly coming to the elders asking for money. We need help. We can't pay our bills. We're falling short. We're falling behind. And you know enough about the family to say to yourself or to the rest of the elders, they're not good with their money. They will probably even acknowledge that. You know, we go down and, you know, we live on corn chips from the convenience store. And, you know, it's just going like water through the hands. And we need help, you know, we've got kids, and we need help for the rent, we need help to put gas in the car to come to services, those kinds of things. And, you know, you've been dealing with this family not just for months, but maybe for years. Now they come again. They want $500, and they're going to lose their house if they don't get the $500 from the eldership. And maybe by this time you've already invested $20,000 in it. What do you do?
I think that it shouldn't have gotten that far to begin with. I'm not sure, but in most congregations you have someone who's a financial advisor, somebody who has a clue of how to manage money, to step in and help them manage money, not take over necessarily their finances, but give them an idea. Now, after it continues to go on and that's been done, that's a tough one.
Well, that's why I asked. What do you as the eldership do?
Sense tells me that somewhere you have to draw the line. And if you don't make people suffer consequences, if what Doug talked about does not help, you know, maybe somebody has sat down with them and talked to them about their finances, and they just don't heed the, you know, the conversation. And somewhere you have to draw the line, don't you?
Doesn't God draw a line?
Yes.
For example, in the Bible, wouldn't it just the widow that they're helping there? I mean, that's our example.
Yeah.
I know, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, you'd have people there in that case. You know, there were no social systems. If you died, I mean, maybe your kids would take you in, but I mean, it was pretty much the church becomes your support system at that point. And it's not like today where people are getting food stamps or some other form of welfare, and there are some people who certainly need that. But we've got some people who, you could say, milk the system, or they say money's going to come in on a regular basis, and I'm going to use that, plus, because of my lifestyle choices, I'm going to need some more, hence, church family, here I am. But doesn't God draw the line on various things? He's drawn a line when it comes to salvation. He draws, you know, if you persist in sin, God says what? All right, he's going to cut you off. Remember the removing of the candlesticks? Seven churches of Asia, Revelation chapter 2, Revelation chapter 3. What happens if you head off into religious error? God says, I'm going to sever you from Christ, Galatians 5 verse 4. So if God is able to draw some lines, are his people not able to justly do the same thing? Yes, they are. Brian, and then I think Jeff, and then Sherman.
It might be a case where Paul mentioned the support of widows in need, that those are really are widows, which puts an obligation on the church to have some kind of screening committee or somebody to make discretionary judgments. Is it appropriate that we help this particular case? I think you need maybe to have some group of guys that will look at the case and make a determination.
Okay. Martin, not. Okay. All right, Sherman?
Now, I agree with some things being said, but we also got to look beyond the $500. If you don't give them $500, and if they lose their house, you talk about family, it's not just a guy or a woman. They got kids. Well, what's the consequences of not taking care of that family? Mm-hmm. And you don't give them $500 to pay the mortgage. You don't give them pay the MIPSCO bill.
Right.
Electric bill. You pay the electric company. There's different ways you can help a family without giving them money.
Right. And here, I think that brings me to where I wanted to make this point as well. There almost seems to be an assumption in those cases where we've helped you for X number of years or maybe the previous eldership, and we're just going to cut you off. No. But, you know, if you're going 50 miles down the road and you see a stop sign up ahead, what do you do? You've got to start applying the brakes, right? And that eldership might say, okay, we're applying the brakes. You know, we don't know what the past elders necessarily did, or we may not approve of that same activity. But, you know, this is the current eldership, and we're hitting the brakes. We want to sit down. If you're asking us for money, we want to sit down with you, and we want to look at your budget. If you don't know how to budget, we're going to work with you on a budget. And, you know, there are some other things that we can do. If you need somebody to go with you and learn how to shop for groceries, if you need somebody to take you to the store so you're not running down to the convenience store, but we're putting the brakes on this. Now, we're not going to just throw you out in the cold, but neither are we going to continue to support the lifestyle. God, in my mind, follows that same pattern when he talks about church discipline. You start heading down the wrong road, God says, be wary, church discipline can be applied. I'm going to start putting the brakes in your behavior. Okay.
But isn't there also another factor in this? You say a Christian family repeatedly, and yet you try to work with them to learn how to manage money and stuff. They're growing as a Christian family. They're going to start learning.
Yeah.
You know, they may hit a hard patch where they have something, but if they're really interested in being a true Christian family, they're going to start learning some of the stuff if they're capable of doing that.
Then if they don't, though, you would tie that into today's lesson.
Yes.
Do you get to a point where you engage in church discipline with a family that is trying to, you know, con the system, if you will? That would be really interesting in a local congregation. I don't know of an eldership that has ever tackled that particular point. And that could open up a whole new can of worms, which we're not going to deal with.
But if it comes to that, if they're kind of the system, then they're sinning.
Yes, and I would agree that you potentially have a case for disfellowship there. And I don't know that that has ever been done in a congregation. And It probably has somewhere, I'm just not aware of it. But, and that's why I say, you know, when elders are, you've got a good eldership trying to do things, there's a lot going on there that you may not realize or understand behind the scenes. And it's a lot more complicated for elders than just, as we've said several times, writing the checks and all those guys that just greet everybody and, you know, maybe send out a letter to the visitors. There's a lot going on when you have an eldership.
And I guess this morning's class, we kind of focused on the negative aspect of discipline. Maybe in previous classes, you talked about the positive aspect. And discipline can occur positively, too.
It can.
The first time that they were coming in needing some help, positive discipline would be, let's sit down.
Yes.
It's going to be conditional. You need to, you know, do this, this, and this.
Absolutely.
Which is the positive aspect, which eventually might have to turn to the negative aspect. Mm-hmm.
You always want that corrective to be as positive as it can, because you're trying to restore the person, you're trying to correct them. You know, maybe they grew up in a household where all they ate was corn chips and Pepsi, and they just don't know any better. So by the things that we talked about, you're trying to get them back on the right direction. That's shepherding the flock. And then if they refuse to do that, now you're into that category of, you know, we're going to have to see exactly what happens here, whether we're just going to at some point say no more money, or it's going to be church discipline. But yes, that's always a track that you want to see if you can possibly pursue. But a lot of people, when they think about discipline, it's looked at in primarily or always negative terms. Any other quick thought? Because we've got some others here that we want to look at. Okay. Tina, did you have a hand? Okay. All right, item two. You have lazy members. Physically lazy people. Now, that would kind of tie in with what we just talked about, so let's pretty much skip over that. But you may have some people who don't want to work. They just want to game the system. What do you do? Well, we've far time today.
You don't work, you don't need.
Yes, and that's why I say you're back into kind of the negative discipline. You've talked to them, tried to correct them, offered them a job perhaps. I've seen that. You have an elder that owns a company and says, this is the kind of work that I am involved with, and you can have a job. Nah, I'd just rather live off the church. Well, now as an eldership, you have some difficulties.
I think with in everybody's life, at one point or another, we all went through a point of laziness, whether it's spiritual or physical, and that's being a little older. I think everybody, even if they don't realize it, some of them have gone through depression and not even known it. That's where the church family helps them, bring them along. Whereas, boys, I know it's hard to disfellowship somebody from being lazy, you know, spiritually in certain parts of their lives, because maybe what they're even going through, they could be mourning a loved one. And so it's, again, it goes back to what you're saying, the wisdom of
it's
who
tough.
The elders are.
You know, sometimes you, as an elder, you just wish you had Solomon's insights. Let's turn to that point that he made as far as spiritual laziness. Most congregations operate by the 80-20 rule, don't they? Mm-hmm. What's the 80-20 rule?
When it sounds like we're going to do all the work.
All right, or 80% of the work. All right, well, what about the 80%ers? Let's say that that's true in every congregation for today's class. What do the elders do with those 80% that could be more spiritually active? Are they going to withdraw from them? You might need a smaller building. Well, there, I think you go back to the positive aspect. You know, it's probably now there have been some elders who have told the preacher, "We want you to get up and we want you to preach on attendance until people start coming." Well, I've seen that congregation do that. I've seen a guy preach on attendance for 3 years straight, and you know, that really didn't do anything. People's hearts didn't change. But you know, to have kind of a mentoring program like you see there in the world, trying to work with people, elders have done that. Some of it, I think, too, is due to ignorance, as Doug was saying. You have people, they grow, and maybe one day they become a very productive person, but they sort of get stuck in a rut for a little while, and they just never start to sprout until something happens a little later in life. So there you need patience and wisdom on the part of the elders. But that is a problem. If you had a business, and 80% of your people were not nearly as productive as they could be, you'd be pulling your hair out. You'd be thinking, well, how can I possibly continue? How can my business prosper? You'd almost be tempted to fire the 80% and say, we want to hire all these people and get in replacement. So it's a process of teaching, and it's one of the things that for elders is very, very frustrating. Quick point about that.
Brad, the 80-20 rule works in the corporate world, too, though.
Yes, it does. Yeah. And like I say, they have to just, I mean, you need employees to staff whatever you're doing, whether it's this receptionist job or the guy out there in the factory floor, or the computer tech guy, whoever that is. And, you know, you make do with what you have. Two, I think as elders, you have to remember, at the end of the day, everybody has free will, don't they? Just like kids. And you can teach, you can encourage. There are some cases where you need to use discipline, but at the end of the day, you can shepherd the flock, to the best of your ability, but people are still going to make their own choices, and if you've done the best that you can, you're free from that blood, if there is any, to be paid by God. All right, number three, one or more members, is a busybody, meddling in the affairs of others. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. What do? Sister so-and-so loves to talk. Now, you talk to her, and she says, well, you know, this is just fellowship on the phone with Sister so-and-so. We just love to visit. But you've got gossip being stirred up in the congregation. What do, Mr. Elder?
Well, I think you first you talk to the one that's doing the gossiping, and then you talk, bring them both together, but they're gossiping about. Put them face to face.
But this isn't a one-time deal. This is an ongoing arrangement.
You probably have a preacher preach on it. Some, you know.
Another 3 years of sermons?
We've got to teach people and then talk about the fact that those of us that might be have itching ears and want to hear all of the negative stuff, we need to be preached to also. Because, you know, if they got nobody that's going to listen, they probably aren't going to say a whole lot. And I have to work on me all the time. I'm a work in progress. And I personally, I think we as Christians really don't want to hear bad things about other Christians that's there. And if we do hear them, then I think we have a responsibility to try to help the one that's maybe got a problem. Maybe there's not a problem there at all. You know?
Yeah. There are, you know, we talked about this several classes ago, too. Remember what I told you about counselors? I'm not a trained counselor, but one time I took a little course in counseling, and the most valuable thing I took away from the course, I made that clear in the class. A counselor is not someone who gives a lot of what?
Advice.
Counselor is someone, if you get a really good counselor, somebody who really knows what he or she is doing, they're going to do more
listening.
All right, let's take that truth and apply it to an eldership. You, as an elder, have that situation. You think maybe one of the elders that knows that sister, maybe he's known her for 40 or 50 years, might take her out for lunch. And you think maybe he could just say a couple things and let her do a lot of talking. And just with a small amount of conversation, give her enough information to go back and think about. Sometimes we have the old expression that what is more? Less is more. You think that comes or is true when it comes to dealing with people and correction? If you're an employee out there in the workforce, you want a 30-hour lecture or a 30-minute lecture on what you did wrong? No. Chances are, if you really like that employer, and you know he or she has dealt with you well over the years, if there's a problem, what's he or she going to say? Calibrated the machine lately? You know, people generally are not stupid. So when somebody hears that kind of thing, have you checked the numbers closely? When you hear that, what are you thinking? You infer something from that. Because they're implying that there is either an issue or there is potentially an issue. And when you hear that, what do you conclude?
What did I miss?
What did I miss? So, been spending a lot of time talking to Sister So-and-so? Oh yeah, we talk every day. And like I say, there are some things, we talked about this too. Sometimes a light footprint can be a lot heavier than a heavy footprint. So there again, it goes back to the wisdom of elders. Now that may not be the cure-all for every situation, but there are things like that where elders, because of the position that they occupy and their relationship to the flock, that sometimes they can apply the less is more strategy, and it works out really, really well. It goes back to what we said just a few moments ago. It's more positive. You know, you're letting people kind of fill in those blanks rather than just going out and giving, the Bible says gossip, and we know about you. Well, you can do that, but that may not be the most successful tactic. All right, let's skip through a couple of other of these. 3 John verse 10, you have Diotrephes there. And Titus chapter 3 verses 10 and 11, the factious man. You think there have been some congregations that have had fruit inspectors, and I'm not talking about pears and oranges.
Yes, like the International Churches of Christ. I think that's what they teach.
Okay.
I mean, all right.
What about outside of their group? Us. You think we have or can have fruit inspectors?
Yes,
People decide that they're going to be the one who decides what's right, what's wrong, what's just, what's not just. You know, that can be a problem for an eldership. It could be within the eldership, but that can be an issue. And that's sometimes a matter that elders have to, again, address. And that may be a heavy-handed issue where it's, you know, you're involved with this behavior and it's wrong. And, you know, that's just going to have to stop. So there's some things, it's just like with a parent. You know, there are certain items that kids may do, and this is non-negotiable. I mean, we're not trying to be hateful, but we are telling you in the nicest way that we can that this is simply something that can't be tolerated. I mentioned to Doug last night at the baseball game, we had a fellow in one of the places where Teresa and I worship, visitors, believe it or not, as they were coming into the building, he would approach them and ask if they'd ever been married and divorced before. And he wanted to know the circumstances about their divorce. You know, he was going to check out the fruit even before it made in its way into the building. Now, you know, he had no idea who those people were as far as visitors. But, you know, people have done some really extreme and some really crazy things, and they just lack authority for that. What about members with strong opinions? Can you have that in the congregation? Well, I was thinking, when I say opinion, I'm thinking opinion. So again, you know, that's something to be wary of as well, but elders can deal with that. And it might not just be a male. You think some kids may have some strong opinions? Teenagers? Think some of the women may have strong opinions? Absolutely. Think a congregation across town may have some strong opinions? So if you are an elder, you're being hit from all sides. So if you are someone who doesn't have a lot of backbone, the waters can get kind of rough. Sherman, a quick thought?
Terry mentioned about biblical opinions, and then he kind of laughs it off. But that's true. A lot of people have biblical opinions, but that's their opinion of biblical facts. Mm-hmm. And as they grow older, they may change that opinion.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
Something to be, you know, aware of.
It is. False teachers. You think that can be a problem for elders?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And if a congregation is affected by a false teacher and they start swaying over this way, now you've got maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 elders trying to turn back the tide against that. That's very difficult. And maybe some of those fellows Paul talked about in Romans chapter 16, they can be very charming, smooth talkers, and it is another headache for the elders. So there again, sound doctrine. Point 6, what if discipline is needed and the congregation has no elders or the elders will not act? Those are also challenges that congregations can face, and very, very difficult. If a congregation doesn't have elders, is it just going to be, you know, kind of out there, it can't do anything till it has elders? No. I mean, it's probably going to be less efficient in some ways, but don't conclude that an elder, that a lack of an eldership is going to make a congregation impotent. Point 7, might an elder need to be disciplined? Yes. Now that again is difficult, but there have been cases where that has been necessary. Paul gives us a little information. 1 Timothy 5:19 says, don't receive a charge against an elder without some witnesses. How would elders deal with issues involving non-members? We may assume that elders only deal with things related to the church, and by and large, that's true. But what if you have a non-member coming in and creating chaos in an assembly? All right, they're going to have to do something. Now, are you going to have a policy where you physically remove that person? Are you going to physically restrain that person? We're looking at some things as far as violence here. We currently don't have an eldership. But, you know, those are items that need to be asked and answered. We had a fellow show up one night when we had elders, and he said the Holy Spirit told him to come in and preach. Well, the elders handled that. But there are those circumstances that come up that you have non-members sometimes creating a situation that needs to be dealt with. We don't have time to discuss that in any more detail. And then number 9, this jewel. Person says, well, everybody sins. You're the elder, you're going to a person, and you say there's this issue, it's a very specific problem, and the person just glibly says, well, everybody sins, and this is just kind of my weakness. Well, that's nice. What do you say? Huh?
Until it doesn't make it right.
Oh, okay, I think that might be one of the points. You know, you're just trying to gloss over this and say it's no big deal, right?
Everybody sins, that's right.